All right. Let me begin by thanking the organizers for the invitation and for putting together a really fantastic program. So I'd like to talk about some developments that took place in the last 2 years, and in particular about a paper that we wrote together with Ashwin and some subsequent work. I should say that the initial motivation for this paper came from a work by Son that I'm sure will be mentioned in the subsequent talks. And I should say that there have been a number of concurrent and subsequent papers. This is really a very, very active field, and we already heard a bit from Sentil and Nati yesterday, and we'll hear more from Chong and Lessig in the next session. Okay, so the reason many of us are very excited, as Sentil pointed out yesterday, is that in the last couple of years, we've discovered unexpected connections between three seemingly different problems. The first problem is the problem of surface states of three-dimensional topological insulators, particularly in the presence of strong correlations. A second problem is a problem of certain three-dimensional quantum spin liquids with an emergent photon, kind of akin to quantum spin eyes. And the third problem, the connection to which is perhaps most surprising, is the classic old problem of quantum Hall fluid at filling factor 1/2. Okay, so I will not have too much to say about the connection to this last problem, but Chong and Lessig, I believe, will. All right, so let me begin with the main result, which takes the following form. So this result is a duality. And on one side of the duality, imagine that we have a three-dimensional topological insulator, and imagine that there is a single Dirac cone sitting on that surface, just a free Dirac electron. And I claim that this free Dirac electron has a dual description in terms of a dual Dirac fermion, which is coupled to a U1 dynamical gauge field little a. So this dual theory is nothing but a 2 plus 1 dimensional quantum electrodynamics, QED3. And the physical interpretation of this dual fermion is that it's a 2hc over e vortex in the electronic fluid. So for this reason, I will refer to this duality as a particle vortex duality of Dirac fermions. Now, the subscript on this dual fermion, CF, stands for composite fermion. And the reason for the nomenclature, those of you who are familiar with quantum Hall effect will remember that there, the composite fermion is really an electron bound to two flux quanta. So here, it's a 2hc over a vortex. You will see more connections to, you know, to why this is really closely related to the composite fermion of the quantum Hall fluid in the next few talks. I should say that Nati talked yesterday about a web of dualities, and this is really one of those dualities. Okay, so for every duality, we need a dictionary to relate operators on the two sides of the duality. So we can ask, well, the physical electron density, how is it expressed in these dual variables? And turns out that it's nothing but the flux of this gauge field little a. If you ask, the electron insertion operator, how does that look in the dual variables? Well, that's an operator that creates flux for pi, which by this first line is the same as physical electric charge 1. So it's an instanton operator in spacetime. And as I already noted, the dual fermion has the interpretation of being a flux 4 pi vortex in the electronic fluid. Next issue I'd like to discuss is how asymmetries are realized on the two sides of the duality, most particularly time reversal symmetry. So we know that the single Dirac cone on the topological insulator surface is protected by is gapless due to the time reversal symmetry. So how is this symmetry manifested in the dual theory? Well, it turns out that in the dual theory, it maps to particle hole symmetry of the dual fermions. And that actually makes sense, because we know that under time reversal, an electron goes to an electron, but a vortex goes to an antivortex. Currents get reversed. So since the dual fermion is really a vortex in the electronic fluid, we should expect it to go to its antiparticle under time reversal. And that's indeed what we conclude. Similarly, the particle hole symmetry of the electrons gets mapped to a time reversal symmetry of dual fermions. All right. And let me point out that this fermionic duality is very reminiscent of a familiar bosonic duality that was mentioned both in Sentels and Nettie's talk yesterday. So this is the particle vortex duality of bosons. One can think of it as taking place near a Mott insulator to a superfluid transition of bosons, say in an optical lattice. Usually we think of this transition as condensation of bosons. But there is actually a dual picture where one starts with a superfluid state and phase disorders this superfluid by proliferating vortex defects. So these are just two different ways of looking at the same physics, there is a mathematical way to capture this in saying that this transition described by boson condensation, this XY model, is the same as this abelian Higgs model. So this is an old duality going back more than 30 years. So now it took us 30 years to realize how to do this for Dirac fermions. All right. So let me show how one can use this duality of Dirac fermions to access some familiar as well as not so familiar surface phases of a topological insulator, including some strongly correlated phases. So let me remind you that all surface phases of a topological insulator can be divided into three categories. First, we have gapless phases, such as the single Dirac cone. Then we have symmetry broken phases, with either the particle number symmetry or time reversal symmetry being broken. And actually, for a long time, it was thought that these two options exhaust the list of possibilities. However, a couple of years ago, it was realized that there really is a third option. The surface can be gapped and at the same time symmetric, provided that it supports the right kind of topological order, that is, the right kind of anion excitations. Of course, this last option is only possible when the surface is strongly correlated. All right, so let's see how to access some of these phases using the dual description. So let's begin with a boring example. So we know that if you start with the free Dirac cone of electrons and break time reversal symmetry by turning on this mass term, then we get a trivial gapped surface state with electrical hole conductance plus minus half, depending on the sign of the mass. And it turns out that in this dual theory, one reproduces exactly the same state with a half hole conductance simply by turning a mass on for these dual fermions. OK, that's not very interesting. We already understand this, this trivial phase very well. Let's discuss a more non-trivial example. So we can use this dual theory actually to access a very exotic, strongly correlated gapped symmetric topologically ordered surface state called the T-Fathen. Now, this state was conjectured to be a symmetric surface state of a TI a few years ago, but we really never understood how it's connected to the Dirac cone, and this to the Dirac cone of electrons. And this dual theory really gives us a way to directly access this this exotic phase. And in fact, in these dual variables, this very complicated state is quite simple. It just corresponds to Cooper pairing of these dual fermions. So putting these dual fermions into a Fouquet superconductor of these dual fermions. So this process gaps out the dual fermions. It Higgses out the gauge field, so it's a totally gapped state. And turns out that it has anion excitations. And the most kind of the most fundamental, or maybe the most interesting of these excitations, is a Majorana non-abelian excitation with charge 1/4, which can be thought of as a vortex in this pair condensate of dual fermions. Okay. So I believe Chong and Lessig will discuss other applications of this duality. But now let me move on and let me give a derivation of this Dirac duality. And the derivation will proceed through an intermediate step, which will by itself be quite quite curious. This intermediate result will be an electric magnetic self-duality, but taking place in the bulk of a topological insulator. Electric magnetic self-duality of a topological insulator coupled to a U1 gauge field. So let me explain how that proceeds. Okay, so let's begin with a bulk topological insulator. Let's couple it to a dynamical gauge field A. Well, if we integrate out the electrons in the bulk, we get an effective response for A described by Maxwell theory with a topological term at theta equal to pi. And as Sentel already noted in his talk yesterday, one of the effects of this topological term is that if you stick a magnetic monopole into the topological insulator, it sucks up a fractional charge, which is proportional to the theta angle and to the magnetic charge. That's known as the Witten effect. So if you take a magnetic monopole with flux 2 pi, a single magnetic monopole, it sucks up an electric charge 1/2. But if you take a double monopole, then it sucks up an electric charge 1. But of course, one can always add or remove an electron from a monopole. So one can neutralize this charge 1 double monopole, making it a charge 0 double monopole. But in the process of neutralization, you remove a fermion. And this process of removing a fermion is actually what turns this double monopole, this neutral double monopole, into a fermion. So the fact that the neutral double monopole is a fermion will be important in what follows. Okay, so next, let me look at the lattice of all possible electric and magnetic excitations inside of this gauge topological insulator. So here are the magnetic monopoles, single magnetic monopoles with half odd integer charge. Here are the double monopoles with integer charge. And if I stare at this lattice, I notice that actually it's invariant under the following transformation, which exchanges a single electric charge and the double monopole. It's a kind of a basis change on this lattice, as Sentel discussed yesterday. And in fact, it's not just a symmetry of this lattice. Turns out that it's a symmetry of the gauged topological insulator, provided that at the same time, one changes the coupling constant from E to 4 pi over E. And as a check, we remind ourselves that, well, the electric charge maps to the double monopole. And both of these objects are fermions, as we just discussed. So the statistics is preserved by this duality. And in fact, this duality, this mapping, is an element of an SL2Z group of electric magnetic self-dualities of the Maxwell theory discussed by Cardia a long time ago. What's non-trivial about this particular element is A, that it fixes theta equal to pi. That's a kind of a preferred value of theta for it. And more importantly, the way that it interplays with time reversal symmetry. So in fact, under this mapping, we'll find that the time reversal symmetry and particle hole symmetry are interchanged. Remember, time reversal symmetry maps electric charge to electric charge, but it inverts the magnetic charge. But now this self-duality exchanges the electric and magnetic charges. So instead, so naturally, the time reversal symmetry maps to particle hole symmetry. OK, but you might object that actually the physical topological insulator doesn't naturally have particle hole symmetry. It has time reversal, but not particle hole. So here, if one actually looks at the periodic table of topological insulators in three dimensions, one finds that there is this class A3, so-called chiral topological insulator, which is actually protected precisely by particle hole symmetry. The classification, the non-interacting classification of such chiral TIs is actually integers rather than Z2 as it is for ordinary topological insulators. And this integer simply corresponds to the number of gapless Dirac cones on the surface of this chiral TI. So the statement that I'm making is that a gauged ordinary TI is dual to a nu equal 1 gauged chiral TI, chiral TI with a single Dirac cone on its surface. OK, so let's make a few checks of this duality. Well, one way to check it is to look at the interaction between electric and magnetic charges, between the dions. We know that when the dions are static, that interaction is just a Coulomb interaction. There is part coming from the charge and part coming from the magnetic charge. So if we had a simple case of theta equal to 0 and a bosonic charge matter, then this lattice of dions would just be a square lattice. So obviously, if we interchange the electric charge and the magnetic charge, and if we simultaneously invert the coupling constant, then this Coulomb interaction is invariant. But maybe that doesn't convince you of this self-duality. But actually, there is a kind of more convincing computation one can do. One can look at the partition function of the theory on an arbitrary manifold and show that it's invariant under this transformation. This was done by Witten a few years ago. OK. So we are in a slightly more complicated situation. We have theta equal to pi and fermionic charge matter. So our lattice of dions is kind of slanted. But again, we notice that if we exchange now electric charge with a double monopole and appropriately transform the coupling constant, again, the interaction between the dions remains invariant. Again, maybe this by itself doesn't convince you, but one can again look at the partition function of the theory on an arbitrary manifold. There are brackets here that I'll explain. And again, one finds that the partition function is invariant. OK, so that's nice. But remember, I made a slightly stronger statement. I made a statement that actually this duality, not only does it preserve the partition function, but it actually maps the time reversal symmetry to particle hole symmetry. OK, so how do we check this statement? Well, let's first remind ourselves, how do we generally check how a certain system responds to how a certain system implements a global symmetry? So suppose I had some unitary symmetry, maybe U1 or Z2. Well, one way to check how the system implements that symmetry is to thread flux of that symmetry through various loops in the system, and then compute the partition function. OK, well, that's very, very nice for unitary symmetries. But what if you have time reversal symmetry? Well, what Anton Kapustin taught us is that the analogous procedure in the case of time reversal symmetry is to study the partition function of the theory on a non-orientable manifold, something like a Möbius strip. So here I drew a Möbius strip, and as I go around this strip, I drew time to reverse its orientation as I go around the strip. So then I need to use the time reversal symmetry to glue together the ends of this strip, kind of the way one uses U1 symmetry to glue the ends of the ring together when one puts flux through it. Okay, so you know, if I tell an experimentalist, Andrea, to put his system on a non-orientable space-time manifold, he will probably never talk to me again. But as a theorist, actually, this is a game that one can play, and it's useful. So in particular, one can study a topological insulator on a non-orientable, in general, non-orientable manifold in the presence of some background gauge field. And for an ordinary topological insulator protected by time reversal symmetry, the resulting partition function is just always plus or minus 1. So that's consistent with the fact that if I have two copies of an ordinary topological insulator, that's trivial. For this chiral topological insulator, things are a bit more interesting. Actually, the partition function on a general manifold is